This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by DK Eyewitness Travel Guides. These colorful guidebooks are filled with great information and are one of my favorite guidebooks. I have 20 of them here on my bookshelf. Learn more at dk.com. This episode is also sponsored by Trippy.com. Trippy.com is a leading travel community and a great place for you to get answers to your travel questions or to answer to the travel questions for other people or connect with fellow travelers. Check that out at Trippy.com. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo. Amateur Traveler, episode 448. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about seafood, earthquakes, explorers, and fado music as we go to Lisbon, Portugal. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We'll be hearing from both our sponsors later on in this program, but first, let's talk about Lisbon, Portugal. I'd like to welcome to the show Nelson, and I'm going to butcher Nelson's name here, but his last name is Cavalheiro. Nelson, welcome to the show. Your blog is of the same name, so for people who can't tell what I'm saying, we're going to put a link to it in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. And Nelson has come to talk to us about Lisbon. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chris. Very happy to be here.
And you were recommended to me by Jody Edinburgh, former guest on the show, who I said, I wanted somebody who knew Lisbon. And she said, Nelson is your man.
Yes, it's true.
And what is your connection with Lisbon?
I was general manager there for two hotels for 4 years. Besides this, I'm a Portuguese national, even though I live in Berlin now. But I know the city very, very well. And these places that I managed, they were high-scale boutique luxury hotels. And I'm a little bit of an insider of Lisbon. And that's one of the things I also talk about a lot in my blog.
And Lisbon is a place that I wanted to know more about. So why should someone go to Lisbon?
I think one of the main things is Lisbon has been regarded until the few recent years as a tier two, tier three city. Mm-hmm. So somebody coming over from the US, everybody goes to Rome, everybody goes to Paris, Madrid, Barcelona, London, and they do all of this. And then after they've done Tuscany or the Costa del Sol or the Costa Brava, then they start to think about what else should I see? And this is already on their maybe fourth, fifth time to Europe. And the trend that has been growing lately is that most of these persons who travel from the US, they don't want to go to these tier one cities in the first place. They rather go to somewhere where nobody has even heard about it, especially not for somebody who is just, you know, wants to travel mainstream. So the first reason why I'm saying you should travel to Lisbon is because almost nobody has ever been there for somebody from the US. And awkwardly, because it's actually the first capital of Europe, which is closest to the US, you don't have to travel all the way to Spain or everything. Right. Mm-hmm. This is like what we call it, the ocean capital of the Western world.
Excellent. And if we had, say, a week to visit Lisbon and the surrounding area, what would you recommend we do?
Lisbon is quite a small town. It doesn't have more, actually the center of the city doesn't have more than 800,000 people. So a week is a lot of time. I would recommend you do something else like besides these days, but I think we can catch on to that later on. The hard part of the city, it's this central part next to the river. Lisbon had a big earthquake in 1755. So all right. The city was reconstructed in these times afterwards. And what happened was that Lisbon kept all the layers of empire that were in this land, the Romans, the Visigoths, the Moors, and all the Cushian kings. So all this kind of maze of streets up and down, and Lisbon is a very hilly city. So it's kind of this maze of several layers of history, all with 18th century buildings.
Well, and I hear it, when it's compared to a U.S. city, the closest city that I hear it compared to all the time would be San Francisco. Hilly it's city, occasionally shakes, beautiful bridge. That seems to be, except of course you have much more history than we have here, centuries more.
Let me tell you, because I've been to San Francisco and there is nothing like it. I think it's true. There are three or four things which kind of match, which is the bridge, which our bridge is a replica of the Golden Gate. Mm-hmm. There's no way to somebody went there and took a photocopy of it and made it here. And there's the hills, there's the tram, but the ambience, the feel is completely different. San Francisco is a very big metropolis. There is a whole lot of American feel to it. There is a whole lot of this grandeur. Lisbon is a very petite city. There's some of these streets close to the castle that two people can't walk side by side. And they're all cobblestones.
Right, sure. I haven't been to Lisbon, which is one of the reasons I want to do the show, but I've seen Macau, for instance, which has patterned their central plaza on the plaza of Lisbon with all the cobblestones and the interesting designs in them and such, too. So you mentioned the castle. So I imagine we're starting in the old town.
The old town has the castle hill and all this way down from the river. And mm-hmm. this is kind of the old quarter where all these old people sing this music called Fado, mm-hmm. which is World Heritage. And this is kind of the more hardcore traditional Lisbon where people still live in kind of this way that they did like 50 or 60 years ago. And the kids still playing the street football in front of a church and you can see them like playing there. So this is really the place to go in and see real Lisbon. And then you have the downtown area, which is kind of an orthogonal shape, a little bit like a new city with horizontal and vertical lines. This is kind of the shopping center. And then there's all this kind of new part where all the bars and all the trendy shops are, which is called Bairro Alto and Principal.
The castle, and I don't know the Portuguese pronunciation, but it's St. George's Castle is the
English. Yeah, St. George's Castle, yeah. It's kind of this attraction, but there's really not much to see there.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I mean, there's like some ruins and there's a few, like a nice belvedere, but Lisbon is full of hills and there's like five or six more like pretty belvederes and you don't have to queue and wait so long to get in the castle.
Ah, okay. So you would recommend instead of the castle, for instance, we go to...
to the Belvedere in the Príncipe Real. That's a nice Belvedere. Or the Belvedere of Graça. That's a really nice one as well. Also, if you like drinking, there's a few rooftop bars in Lisbon, which are very trendy now. And Lisbon has 300 days of sunshine per year. So sundown cocktails is something that of a trend that's been increasing lately.
Okay. And let's take a break here to hear about the first of our two sponsors, and that is the DK Eyewitness Guides. And as I've already mentioned on this show, they're one of my favorite guidebook series. I've mentioned on previous shows the quality of the pictures, the quality of the production of the guidebook itself. One thing that I also appreciate is the beginning section of the guidebook. So in a good guidebook, you'll find at the beginning is an overview of the country or an overview of the region, depending on what you're looking at. And that's one of the things that I like about DK. I don't happen to have a guidebook on Lisbon, so I pulled out Turkey, because I may be heading to Turkey sometime this year. And there are sections on the history of Turkey, on religions, on society, on modern Turkey, on population movements. There are graphs of landscape and geology. There's information about the flora and fauna of Turkey. And that's the kind of things that I'm looking for in a guidebook, is give me some idea of what to expect when I come to the country, and give me an overview for all of the different sites that I'm going to see, which are going to be explained in details more later on. So for more information, check out the DK Eyewitness Travel Guides at dk.com. You've got us downtown. What are we doing while we're down there? We're not going to the castle necessarily.
Yeah, we're not going. So there's little shops there. So if you like to shop, there's like a few very good, like of these old vintage Portuguese shops, which have some very, very interesting materials that you can take as a souvenir for somebody, a little bit of history.
So what are we buying in the shop?
Vintage Portuguese items, like these old bars of soap, which are not on sale anymore.
Okay.
You can buy like little tiles, some food products, or some vinegars, some canned sardines. But if you really want to hunt for a bargain, there's a flea market every Tuesday and Saturday morning. Next to the Castle Hill, and that's where you kind of get these items kind of in its raw state.
Okay.
And then afterwards, I mean, there is this, Lisbon has almost like 10 kilometers of riverfront, so there's a big river walk that you can make from this downtown area all the way to Belém, if you have time. So Belém is the kind of the second cultural center of Lisbon. This is where the Geronimo's Monastery and the Tower of Belém are, which are both UNESCO heritage sites. And this was the place where the old discovery ships sailed from, where they went to sail the world.
Okay, so this is Magellan and Vasco da Gama.
And Bartolomeo Diaz and all these guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is under the reign of the, the navigator.
Infante Dom Henrique.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can tell that I speak no Portuguese.
There is this kind of this cluster of this downtown area, which I was speaking about. And mm-hmm. then after this riverfront walk, there is this second cluster. This is where you have like this long afternoon, people walking in the riverfront, some cycling. And this is where it's this second shop of the Belém pastries, this pastel de nata, which is kind of world famous Portuguese export.
Okay. And I'm going to guess that we didn't tell people when we introduced you that Nelson is more than a little bit of a foodie. So I suspect we're going to have more than a few types of food that we should try while we're in Lisbon.
Yeah, definitely.
and we'll get into more of why that is later on. But
yeah, certainly. I mean, as we're here in Belém, I'll just start with this one. So there's this kind of a little custard tart mm-hmm. that has like a phyllo pastry, bigger than like half of your palm hand. And it's phyllo pastry, and it's got some custard in the middle, and it's kind of this national sweet. So there's this little shop which opened in the 18th century, and it's still open today. It's called Pastéis de Belém. And this is where you can get your kind of a sugar fix. I mean, food-wise, you have to think about that Portugal, and it has the biggest exclusivity zone for fish capture in the whole of Europe.
Right.
If you count as national territory, the territorial waters of Portugal, we are, I think, the third or the second largest country in Europe, even though, like, the land mass, we're the 10th or something like this. So fish and seafood is my utmost recommendation. And the thing I love more about Lisbon is that price-wise, I'm not saying that it's cheap, it's price-wise. You can get amazing quality food, amazing quality accommodation, and transport-wise, taxis, and it doesn't cost you the moon. It's definitely 10 to 15, 20% cheaper than Madrid, and not even speaking about London or Rome or anything else.
Right, sure.
So here you can really get worth your money. And one of our main snacks is a 20 centiliter, like a pint of beer and a few prawns on a dish, and it costs you €3. So like $5.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's incredibly cheap. And I'll just name a few places which are my absolute favorite, which I always recommend to everybody. I think the first one has to be Cervejaria Ramiro, which is kind of a Portuguese name for a brewery. And Ramiro, of course, is the name of the guy. And this is just one of these down-to-earth, very loud, very noisy, very busy environments where they open for midday and they serve seafood constantly throughout the whole day until the night.
And you say cevicheria, is that a place that is
cevicheria, not
cevicheria? Okay.
Yeah, from cerveja, from beer.
Got it. Cevicheria. Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, it's always full, but if you go in the middle of the afternoon, it's kind of nice. Don't ever try and go there after 8 o'clock, because you're just going to wait for an hour and a half, and it's going to really be a pain. So either go for lunch or in the middle of the afternoon, and just order some prawns, some stone crab, a big crab, some barnacles, and some drink it with what we call green wine. Mm-hmm. Which is wine that's not fermented all the way to 12 degrees. They stop it at 9-11. And it's made with this specific grape called Alvarinho, and it's very fresh. It's a little bit fizzy, it's fruity, and it goes very well with seafood. So go to Ramiro and have seafood and green wine.
And you mentioned that they get busy, the first restaurant, after 8 o'clock. And so I'm gathering from that the dinner hour is shifted later again, like your neighbors there to the east.
Not so much. They're
not
crazy.
As much. Okay.
The Spanish are crazy. They have dinner at 11, 10 o'clock. This is not natural for any human being. We Portuguese, we tend to keep our dinner time between 8 and 9 o'clock.
Okay.
If you go at any restaurant at 7, you're going to be the first one there. But in this case, I really, really recommend it. Nobody wants to sit in a queue for an hour.
Sure. Excellent.
The second restaurant is called Ponto Final, and it's actually on the other side of the river. So there's the Tejo, and you need to take the boat, like the ferry boat, from the Cais do Sudoeste station until Cacilhas. So it's a 10-minute ride across the river. It's a beautiful ride. The boat has got this, it doesn't have an open deck, but you've got these large windows that you can see the river and the bridge. And, you know, you can really like kind of even put your hand out and get some surf in your hand. It costs you like €1.50 to cross the river, and it's peanuts. And then when you get over to Casillas, you kind of walk towards the ocean on this riverfront boardwalk. And then actually Ponto Final is English, is Portuguese for final destination. So you kind of walk this riverside boulevard until the end, and it's the one with the yellow chairs. And this place, you can have actually a table by the water. There's no tide, there's no waves. It's just kind of this big bay of the river. And it's something, a place that's very amazing because you kind of have a southern and western view, and you can see like the sunset there. So my recommendation is, if you want to go for this place, the best time to go there is between 3 and 5 o'clock, because you can really get the most of the sun. And you can have a table by the water, and you can look at Lisbon, because one thing is you're in Lisbon and you're in the middle of the buildings, and you kind of lose the idea of what the whole city is. But from this place, you can have a tremendous food, but looking at the other side. The other place that I recommend, it's a little kind of a little eatery. It's not very easy to find. I'll try and guide you guys. There is a second square in the middle of the city called Rocio Square. So this is kind of in the back part of this downtown area. And once you go through an archway, which is really perpendicular to this Rocio Square, into Rua dos Zapateiros, which is called like Shoesmith store, the first restaurant that you're going to find is a place called Merendinha do Arco. So I can't translate this, but it's a very, 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 very nice place. And you'll notice, because it's going to stand, it's a restaurant that it's in front of an 18th century animatographer, which was kind of this prequel to the actual, to the cinemas, mm-hmm. Which was the first one installed in Portugal, in Lisbon, and it's now a peep show. So it's this beautiful 18th century building. There's nothing graphic on the outside. It's very, very photogenic, but you'll see like the coming and going of men on the outside. You'll know whether the restaurant is just the one opposite. And I'm recommending this restaurant because it's just this big long tables where you kind of have to squeeze in to get your place, and you're kind of sharing your lunch with somebody who just lives around the corner, or a businessman, or somebody from the bank, which is also like in this area. One of the dishes that I recommend is cutlass, which is kind of a fish that it's in the shape of a sword. And it's very meaty, and they just grill it, and they serve it with some beans with rice, and it's really, really amazing. And they've got also a little nice liquor in the end. And you kind of go into this place, and you kind of get this feel what it is like to be in a very, very small restaurant in Portugal. And this meal will set you back €10, and it's just incredible fresh food.
Let's take a break here to hear about the second of our sponsors, and that is Trippi.com. Trippi is an online community where you can ask or answer questions about travel. And I say answer because one of Trippi's core values is karma. As they say, helpers are heroes. Our heroes are rewarded with thumbs up from the community, so share the love. We also protect our heroes with a strict no jerks policy. Anyone who makes the community less enjoyable for the rest of us will be shown the door. So remember that as you go over to answer this week's Amateur Traveler question of the week. And the question of the week for this week's Amateur Traveler is, what foreign city has made you feel most at home? To get to the right question, go to amateurtraveler.com/trippy4, and we'll be sharing your answers next week on the Amateur Traveler. Later on in this show, we'll talk about last week's question and your answers for that. So remember, for a great community to talk about travel or get your questions answered, trippy.com. In terms of some of the sites that you mentioned UNESCO World Heritage Sites a couple times already. How many different ones are there in the city?
And the city there too. It's the Geronimo's Monastery and the Belém Tower.
Got it. Both worth visiting?
Yes. I mean, Geronimo's Monastery is very nice. It's this big, big monastery, and you go inside in December that you may find some queues. Mm-hmm. The Tower of Belém, not so much. You have to remember that this tower was actually in the middle of the river. It was kind of this mm-hmm. building built in the 16th century to prevent the pirate attacks to the Portuguese trade ships.
I was reading about some of the pirate attacks in the city, you know, pirates taking 3,000 yeah. female and children hostages and things. So I can imagine why you would want something like that.
Yeah, actually, it's a very funny story because we have the oldest country treaty of mutual defense, which is between the UK and Portugal, was celebrated in the 14th century, 13-something. Mm-hmm. But they were the biggest looters of the Portuguese ships coming over from India.
Sure.
Because for Mr. Drake and Queen Victoria, you know, Francis Drake was the big pirate.
Right.
It was much easier for them to loot the Portuguese ships off the coast of Portugal and actually sailing for their own all the way to India and coming back. So
you've had a more complicated history with the English, let's say.
Yeah. I mean, with English, with the French, and with mostly with the Spanish. Mm-hmm. We've been invaded by them, I don't know, maybe 100 times in the last 500 years. We were actually ruled by them for quite some time during the 17th century.
Yeah. Well, and I also think of more recent history, the English and the Portuguese standing against the French's Napoleon armies.
Yes.
I know what Wellington said at the Battle of Waterloo is he really missed his Portuguese allies who he'd fought beside for many years. So.
Yeah. It was a very, very hard time because that was the time when the royal family escaped with all the crown's wealth to Brazil, and Portugal was left without a rule. So we had the Napoleon army and the Spanish army ruling us again. But actually, funny enough, there was all this history about defense and all the connection with English. But when we regained sovereignty of our crown, it was actually the British ships which let the French people go with all their loot. So they were actually transported in British ships. There's like history has this way of telling stories in a kind of a melodic, in a romantic way. But when you really kind of go through the facts of it, it's a little bit different. But anyway.
And you mentioned the summertime. When is the best time to come to Lisbon?
Spring and summer. You have to remember that this Lisbon is a small town with narrow streets and hilly streets.
Yep.
And it's best seen from the outside. You know, it's getting a pair of comfortable shoes on and just kind of walking your way up and down the hill every day, which kind of makes it a little bit hard to like if you're going in the winter when it's raining, because it does rain a lot, and even though temperatures don't go below like 5 or 6 degrees in the winter, but it rains a lot. And if you have to kind of carry an umbrella and you can't see the map and all the sites are damp, I wouldn't recommend it really. I think Lisbon, you can take the best time of it, spring and summer, and the pinnacle being when the local Saints festivities happen, which is in June, on the 12th of June.
And tell me more about that, yeah, because that was going to be one of my questions, is festivals and good times to go from that point.
Every city in Portugal has a patron saint, mm-hmm. and Lisbon is patron saint is Saint Anthony, and there is this big festivity which takes place from the night of the 12th to the 13th. So this is the night when it's a free-for-all in Lisbon, especially this downtown area. All the streets are closed off to cars, to circulation, and mm-hmm. everybody, I mean, literally everybody brings out a charcoal grill to their door and they start grilling sardines and they start grilling pork steaks and sausages. And you kind of just walk and you ask how much it is and you buy one, and, you know, people sell beer. And it's just this big, massive street party everywhere. I mean, something like 2 million people on the streets, and it's just crazy. But it's a whole lot of fun.
So 2 million people in the streets, but there's only 500,000 people in the city. So yeah, because everybody's coming in from the suburbs.
Everybody's coming in from the outside and from the suburbs, and this whole city gets clogged. But it's nice. It's a nice fun because, you know, everybody's got their own little place and they play music and there's fado singing and you can dance and you can have a beer. And this goes on from, I don't know, maybe the middle of the afternoon until late night in the evening. But it only happens once a year, on the night from the 12th to the 13th of June.
Okay. And then I was interrupting you. You were taking us on tour through the city, so.
There's a few other places which I would recommend to go, especially if you're interested in museums. One of them is the Kalust Kulbenkian Museum, which is this gentleman from Armenia who got exiled in Portugal after the Second World War, and he was kind of an oil tycoon. He was the one that managed the lease contracts between the British and the Americans to the oil fields in the Ottoman Empire.
Okay.
So he was worth, I don't know, at the time, maybe $500, $600 million. He ended up getting sick and dying in Portugal and left all his fortune to this foundation and all his private collection of art in this beautiful, beautiful museum. If I have to recommend one museum, it's this one. It's the Kalust Kulbenkian Museum, which is very, very interesting. I mean, a few other things that you can do. I mean, if you, as I said, if you like to go around and discover a little bit more of this side art, this kind of street art scene, in the Bairro Alto and in the Príncipe Real area, there's like a whole lot of these little ateliers.
Excellent.
Otherwise, what I was saying before, if you're kind of going to Lisbon for a week, I would say you leave like 4 days just to tour Lisbon. And I would recommend that you go to kind of this nearby place, which is called Sintra and Cascais.
Okay.
So this kind of place was always very connected with the British, again, because of this history. And even during the Second World War, this was the place where the Allies and the Axis met regularly for lunch. And, you know, they went to each other's houses and they had some parties together. And this was actually also the place where Ian Fleming thought up his David Bond character, was in Estoril, in this area. So there's a lot of this Portuguese Riviera thing going on. So if you kind of like this little bit of a, more of a glamour scene, I would recommend this area, Estoril and Cascais.
And where is that from Lisbon?
Going west towards the ocean from Lisbon, and it's about a, I don't know, half an hour drive. You can ask for a cab. It doesn't, I think it's like 30 euros. It's very, really cheap. If you know, you can take the train, which goes through the river and the ocean front, which is quite nice. And if you want to stop to go to the beach on the way, you can also do it, because Lisbon is the only European capital with a beach. Sintra is just, it's also a World Heritage place, even though it's not Lisbon City, so that's why I didn't mention it before. But it's just this a little town, which is just a garden. It's this big, big, beautiful garden. And I also manage the hotel there, the Sintra Boutique Hotel. And this city, this little city, besides being this big garden, it has, I think, 5 or 6 palaces, which are just kind of breathtaking in their art. It's because you have like Moorish tiles, this kind of Renaissance and Rococo influences, some gold, lots of art. So if you're like a day out from Lisbon, I would recommend this.
Excellent. What is going to surprise me about Lisbon?
One thing that has been consistent over the years is the friendliness. I think every time I speak with somebody, it's always the first thing they said, it's the friendliness. You have to think about that when you travel to France, when you travel to Italy, to Spain, you're going to have to massage your way through the conversations in the local language. In Portugal, it's the other way around. We do the work of trying to speak the visitor's language. Everybody's going to know a little French or know a little Spanish or know a little English, and they're always going to try and be nice to you. This is the big characteristic of the Portuguese, is this kind of warm, welcoming idea. And I think the second thing that's going to surprise you is the Lisbon is a city of light. I had one of my guests, a film director, at one of my this palace that I managed, and he mentioned that Lisbon is kind of a cinematographer's dream, because it's got this maze of old streets and these 18th century buildings, and they're almost all white, and there's this kind of rolling hills, and you see the kind of the city going down towards the water. And it's just very, very cinematographical. And then it's not, I can't say that it's a kind of a dream, it's a dreamy city, but it's, you kind of feel that this place is only like this, and you can't get this feeling anywhere else.
Excellent. Now, I'm a huge fan of history, and Lisbon's history goes back to Phoenician settlements in, what was I reading, 1300 BC or something like that. Where's the best place for someone like me to come in contact with some of the history of Lisbon?
And I know that I didn't recommend the castle,
right.
But simple for somebody like you, it would make sense to go to the castle.
Okay.
Because this is Lisbon's highest hill, and all these invading armies and empires, they all kind of set barricades, sure. and quarters there.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be kind of the starting point for you for this.
Uh-huh.
I think this you kind of get this feel of because there in this whole hill there's a lot of Roman, there's a lot of Moorish, there's a lot of Visigoth, there's a lot of everything mixed together.
Okay.
You're going to find it a little bit hard to go to find something which is before the Moorish, before the Romans. And even the Moorish, there were beautiful Moorish palaces in Lisbon that were completely obliterated by the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much more of finding a very good history guide to guide you through. And my recommendation is to start at this castle hill. And another museum that I would recommend to you is our ancient art museum, which has a lot of this kind of history of Portugal through paintings. And it has also a lot of this old settlements information there. I think you would be kind of well suited there. Because like street-wise, as I said, everything is 18th century. And even though you can like look at a few marks and evidences in the landscape that, you know, this is Moorish and this is Roman, and there's even a Roman theater which is still under renovation on mm-hmm. the castle hill. But anything before that, it's going to be a little bit hard.
Okay, excellent. And in terms of getting around, I'm getting the impression walking city, for some parts of it, that's the only way you're going to get through, and then public transportation, funicular, boats as appropriate to get around. Yes. We're not going to want a car when we're in Lisbon.
No, forget about it. Yep. I mean, when you land in Lisbon Airport, it actually is in the middle of the city.
Oh, interesting.
So a cab ride from the airport of Lisbon to the downtown area takes you 15 minutes and 10 euros. So,
Well, that's a nice change.
Yeah. Unless you're going to go out of Lisbon, a car is the last thing that I would recommend.
Okay.
Forget the fancy shoes, comfortable shoes. You're going to be walking a lot.
See, now that part is similar to San Francisco, but
we don't have a funicular. It's a tram,
right?
The 28 tram. No, sorry, no, I'm wrong. We have a funicular, but it's another. It's like a very very short one.
Uh-huh.
One thing that I wouldn't recommend you do is to take this hop-on, hop-off touristic bus, because this bus doesn't go anywhere in these narrow streets, and it's
sure,
just going to take you. Yeah, just can't. So you might as well just buy a ticket on this 28 tram and take it from where you are, and because it goes on this loop, so you just go around once, and you can just see the city from there, and it's more than enough. If you go out to dinner, and you might have a little bit to drink, and you're kind of full from your dinner, do take a cab home. It's very cheap, so you don't have to kind of climb the hill and make it to your hotel room if you're staying on top of the hill without a breath.
Excellent. And any warning you would give when you're going to Lisbon, besides wear flats if you're...
Lisbon is a pretty safe town, but it is a capital city, so I would definitely, one of my big recommendations is to, especially if you're going on one of these trams, which is overloaded with persons,
sure.
Just keep a very, very good eye on your possessions, belongings. As I said, you can walk the streets in the evening, but if you're a little bit careless on this tram, you might lose your wallet or your phone. This would be the only thing that I would recommend, and bring a lot of appetite for seafood, because you're never going to be able to enjoy so much good seafood for so good money anywhere else in Europe.
Excellent. You're standing in the prettiest spot in Lisbon. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Actually, it's a very little bit hard for me to say this, because I normally don't give recommendations for people that cannot be replicated.
Uh-huh.
I normally always tell things through in my blog or wherever I go.
As we try to also, right?
Yes. But this hotel that I managed, called Palacio Belmonte, it's really on top of this castle hill. It's really narrow. We share walls with the castle. And this place is very magical, because it's a 15th century palace built with Roman and Moorish heritage. You know,
right.
This place has a 2 century before Christ Roman tower, and on top of this, and it also has an 8th century Muslim tower. And on top of this Muslim tower, there is a room called Bartolomeu de Guzmão, And this room, I mean, it's expensive. It costs something like 1,000 euros a night. But the room, which is in a tower, it has 5 levels, and it's not a grand suite at the Ritz with 1,000 square meters. It's I think it has like maybe 100 or 150 square meters. But it has a terrace which overlooks the whole of this old district of Alfama, where all the people are singing Fado. And if you're going to, and this room has a balcony. And then with this balcony, you can see the sunrise over the hill. And this is, I mean, this is one of the pictures I have taken in my blog, which is sadly most often stolen and used in other content, because it's this beautiful red sunlight photo taken from the top of this room. I took it when I was working there. And for me, I worked in this place for 3 years, and it's a small place. It only has 11 suites. And this was one thing that I could never, ever go try and tired of, was to go up to this tower and just watching the sunrise over this little part of Lisbon, which is a little valley. And you can actually hear the guys playing music downstairs. You can hear the tram. You can actually even have a conversation across the hill to the other guys, because it kind of makes this echo and this funnel, sound funnel noise. And you can just really see, mm-hmm. like, you see a big monument there on the back, and you see the little houses, and you see just this kind of a little bit of this still life, which is this Portuguese life. And, you know, there's no skyscrapers, there's no buses, right. There's nothing. It's just this little bit of peace and quiet with the sun coming over this big bay that the Tagus makes next to the city. And even aesthetically, the view is unbelievably balanced from an artist's point of view, and mm-hmm. and it's just something that if I were to recommend the one place in Lisbon, the dream place, it's this place.
And now the place that I can actually afford to go to is where
Lisbon's tourism is on the rise for the last 4 or 5 years,
right.
And there was a big boom in hostels. Very, very good quality hostels. Some of them have gotten kind of this Oscars for the luxury best hostels. So, and one of them is called the Independente. Mm-hmm. And it is on Príncipe Real. It's a very, very nice 18th century building, which was reconverted into a hostel. And it's got a rooftop bar, and it's got a very nice restaurant on the ground floor. And it's just in front of one of the Belvedere that I spoke about, the Barro Alto. So very nice place. There's like maybe 10 or 15 new hotels opening up per year in Lisbon. So you're going to be a little bit spoiled for choice. And with this competition also comes low prices and affordability. You know, if you can afford to stay at this Palácio Belmont, you really please do, because your whole experience of Lisbon is going to be different, because it's a private place. People right. can't just go in for a cup of coffee or something like that. It's private. If you can't afford it, I would really suggest that you either stay in this hostel called the Independente, or you stay in a hotel called Valverde, which is in this new area, Avenida da Liberdade. And here you can get like a very good feel of what this busy kind of the town center is. So for somebody who doesn't want to stay in the center, they can stay in a little bit more safeguard from all the bus.
Right. When you mentioned the luxury hostels, we actually haven't talked about that a whole lot on the show. Resource I would recommend for people would be Cash over at budgettraveler.org has a book about the top 50 luxury hostels of Europe. So if you're interested in hearing more about that, I would check Cash out and what he's done on that. But I'm going to still pin you down to this question. Yeah. If I can't afford to stay in the nice suite, where's the second best spot to see Lisbon?
Okay, I'll give you two choices. Okay. One of them is this second restaurant that I spoke about, mm-hmm. on the other side of the river.
Right, the one over at the last restaurant.
The last restaurant. So this is a very good place, because you can see the whole of Lisbon.
With the yellow...
The yellow chairs and tables. This is a really nice place, because you can see Lisbon from the whole of Lisbon, from the other side.
And
you can see the bridge, and the bonus is that you can have like a nice food with it. The second place that I would recommend to you is a bar called Park.
Okay.
So this is one of the trendy new places of this rooftop bars in Lisbon. And it's really on the top of the kind of the fashion shopping hill called Chiado. And this Park bar in itself is nothing special. It's called park because it's the last floor of a parking building, which was made next to a church. But if you pass on that, when you get up to the top floor, the view is just breathtaking. And the most important thing about this is that it's filled with this kind of new life, new trendy people of Lisbon. So if you're into this, this is one of the best places if you want to go out and meet somebody new. There's all these kind of new characters, new guys who are working in Lisbon and have their own businesses and just go there for a gin at the end of the day or any other cocktail. This is another place that I would recommend to see Lisbon on the sunset, of course.
Excellent. As we start to wrap this up, I've got maybe three questions left, but before I get to them, anything else we should know before we go to Lisbon?
Lisbon is this very kind of small space, and if you're expecting anything grandeur like you saw in the other cities in Europe, this mm-hmm. is a little bit different. I have to think about that Portuguese people are very quaint, and they don't like really to show off a lot. So what you're going to see is kind of this beautiful places through its simplicity and through its very, very distinct lines and colors. It's not going to be gold leaf everywhere. It's not going to be jewelry. It's not going to be this big, big buildings with like 1,000 ornaments or with 1,000 statues as is Rome or Vienna or this thing. This is a down-to-earth country. It's a down-to-earth city, it's really kind of made to be enjoyed on the basic pleasures of life, which is walking through the streets, eating like street food and drinking a beer or eating a prawn or drinking some wine without too much of a fuss.
Okay. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Lisbon.
When I was taking the train in Lisbon, and actually the ticketer had like a little bit of, how can I say, an alcohol stench in the early morning. So I'll tell you this, it was not like he wasn't drunk or anything like this. It's because there is this little liquor called ginginha, mm-hmm. and it's this sour cherry liquor, fermented sour cherry liquor. It's not so much like 18 degrees, it's a little bit sweet. And people just have it as a little shot before in the morning. You have your breakfast, then you have your coffee, and then you go out, and before you go to work, of course not if you work in a bank or anything like this, but this kind of a little job, you have this little thing because it's embedded in the culture, and this guy has been doing this for 50 years. And you can't just go over there and say, hey, Mr. John, you can't do this anymore. And you get there, and you get this smell, and you know what it is exactly. It's this sweet smell from the liquor. And this only happens in Portugal.
And finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Lisbon when what?
When you're looking at one of the Belvederes.
Okay.
And
the towers.
Mm-hmm. One of the towers. And you've had some seafood and you've had some wine for dinner. And you kind of are looking at the city skyline. And there is this melodic...
We got the fado music in the background.
The fado music in the background.
Excellent.
And I think maybe a little bit corny or kitschy if you're somebody who's listening to this. But this is how we are. We are a very sentimental, a very, very touchy-feely kind of nation. And if you're not going there to kind of let yourself loose and kind of be influenced by this, then honestly, I recommend somebody else
going somewhere else. Then go to Spain.
Yeah, of course. For me, this is it. Standing on one of the Belvederes, it's maybe a sundown or any other part of the town, and you just feel this enormous satisfaction within you because you've had this amazing seafood dinner and you have a little wine and there's somebody playing a guitar and singing Fado in the background, and it's a very melancholic music, and you just kind of think about how beautiful life is and how beautiful this city is and how lucky you are to be with your significant other at this time, or you think about what else can happen in your life. And I think this is one of the best things Lisbon has to offer.
Excellent. Last question. If you had to summarize Lisbon in just three words.
Light, quaint, and youth, I think.
Youth, okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, and the youth, yeah.
Excellent. Where can people read more about your travels?
They can go to my blog, nelsoncarvalheiro.com. This is where I post most of my journeys and travels, and they can also follow me on Facebook or Twitter.
Excellent. And I promised that we would mention your connection with food and travel here at the end. Tell people a little bit about what you're doing right now.
I'm the ambassador for the blogging community for the Portuguese Food Travel Association. So I kind of make the connection between what this association is trying to do in promoting travel in Portugal through its food and the blogging community. Just recently, we had a blog trip with five bloggers from India, Hungary, Brazil, US and Spain, and they went around the country for 2 weeks. We sponsored this whole journey where they really get to see Portugal through its food. And the most exciting thing that I'm doing right now was I did a trip for 4 weeks earlier this year where I saw the whole of the country with a photographer, and we're going to launch now at the end of the year the Portuguese travel cookbook, which I've just finished writing this week.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Our guest again has been Nelson Caballero. Thank you, Nelson, so much for coming on the show and telling us about your obvious love for Lisbon.
Thank you very much, Chris. It was a pleasure. And if anybody wants to get some more information, just send me an email. I'm always very happy to reply. Or if anybody wants to stay at Palácio Belmonte and doesn't afford the 1,000 euros, let me know.
Get a 10% discount or something.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
Okay, my pleasure.
I wanted to encourage you to go and check out PassportsWithPurpose.com. Passports with Purpose is a charity program that goes on every year at this time, supported by travel bloggers or podcasters like me. It's a way you can support a great charity effort, and while you're doing it, get a chance to win valuable travel prizes. So Passports with Purpose is something that I've been involved with here for the last, 5 years. So check it out, PassportsWithPurpose.com. Last week's Amateur Traveler Question of the Week on Trippy.com, which is at amateurtraveler.com/trippy3 if you want to participate, was what are the most unexpectedly good countries for wine? And I'd have to say that Ross Sparks from Colorado came up with Morocco, and that did surprise me. Ross said, I love to drink, and Morocco made it very difficult, but I had a chance to try a lot of local wines at a Western-style upscale hotel bar, and wow, I was so surprised at how great the local wines were. I was going on a week without a drink at the time, so that might have had something to do with it. We had a number of other different places named, from Cape Town to Spain, from Hungary to Switzerland, the country of Georgia and Armenia. So check out all those answers at trippy.com, amateurtraveler.com/trippy3. Before we end this episode, also, if you are interested in going on the 15-day trip to Morocco, we are currently 3 short of the 8 that we need to get that trip going. So if you're going to want to do that one, you need to sign up in a hurry. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.